us today. Good to see you all here. I hope you all had some marvelous snow days recently. A few matters of business before I ask what you want to know about. So something snow. First, a smallish number of you, when you try to submit, you get some sort of error message saying something about a multi-part form. If that happens to you, just go back to the homework page, reload it, resubmit. There's a link on that error page that tells you to email somebody that doesn't really need to know. And I had an interesting conversation with him today. And anyway, so if you get some sort of, it doesn't submit, you try to submit, it gives you an error, reload the homework page, retry the submit, and it should fix. If that doesn't happen, you're welcome to send me email, and we'll try to figure out what's going on. First point. Second point. A week from today, let me make sure this is absolutely true. Yes, a week from today, we have an exam. So, what do you need to know about that today? We'll have a review session on that on Friday. Get to talk about what's going to be there and so on. If you qualify for LNEC accommodations, you need to contact the LNEC probably today about making alternate arrangements. They will ask you how it works. You talk about email and everything should be fine. I'm happy to talk with you more about that after. If you have a university excused absence a week from today, on the lecture notes for today, there's a link for a place where you can tell me about it so that we can try to find alternate arrangements for that as well. Otherwise, just plan to show up a week from today, and we'll talk more about how that works on Friday. I think that's the announcements I had. So questions, comments, concerns, or other things for me? Oh, there is one more. Sorry. Homework 1 grades are in gradebook with comments and actual numbers that reflect your final grade. So look at that. If you have concerns with that, again, grading concerns go to your quest tracker, not to me, not to Piazza, not to some random TA you catch in the hall. So check that subpoint. Hopefully homework 2 will come up pretty soon. I will also comment, as you're looking at your homework 1 grades, you might get full credit and still have a comment that describes something you should have done better. Okay? We're trying to teach you what you should do better. By the time we start grading homework 3, we will start expecting you to have actually done those things better. So if there's a comment that says something, for example, your code is ugly and hard to read, then you should format your code before you submit homework 3. There was a question.
For the activity that you did, I guess, last week on Wednesday.
Yes. Crypto Chase.
What do we have to submit for that?
Question. What do you submit for the cryptography chase that we did last Wednesday? On Wednesday, you were able to submit the code you wrote because we were interested in the code you wrote. For 11-10 students, that code you wrote is not part of your grade. If you did not submit it, you are not penalized and it's no longer available to be submitted. Other questions? Yes.
What happens to the lesson that
got canceled? Good question. Also, what happens to the lab that got canceled? So it turns out as I was designing my schedule, there was one lecture in one lab I thought just didn't have quite enough content, and they happened to be the two that were canceled for snow by some amazing propinquity. So we'll cover what I think was important from that lecture today. We'll push a little bit further back, so we won't have quite as much about files on the first test as I expected, but for the most part, you won't even notice. Other questions? Okay. So the first thing I want to do today, in the lecture notes for today, there's a link to what I call a loop visualization tool, which I wrote in the spare weekend once. So it's not quite finished. I probably took about 2 weeks to get it complete, but it's pretty good. And we're going to talk a little about what it lets you do, hoping that the link will go. So what happens in the loop visualization tool? One of the things that sometimes happens as you're walking through loops is you might have a piece of code, okay, and you might have difficulty picturing what it's doing, understanding what does the computer do when it sees this code, okay? So I have, in this particular code, I have x equals 100 while x is greater than 0, x divided equals 5 minus 10, which just looks really strange, okay, and I print out x. Now, you can type a subset of Java, and there's a description of the part of Java you can use. There are no strings. You can only use numbers, but anyway, It lets you get enough to see what's going on with loops anyway. So I could say I want to use this code, and then it will syntax highlight it down here and will show me what looks like it's happening when I run the code. Okay? So this is a timeline here. And if I go along the bottom here, I can see the first time step, I'm doing this piece of the code. And if I scroll down here, sorry, this is not scrolling quite as well as I'd wanted, there's actually a description of what the memory looks like. There's an int valuable x that has 100 in it. Okay? And as I mouse over different pieces, I can see how the program advances and what it does. Okay? I can see what happens to variables at different spots and so on. Eventually see the output. So the goal here is to let you sort of visualize code. Okay? This particular code, really simple. It only goes around once because it turns out that 5 minus 10 is negative 5, 100 divided by negative 5 is negative 20, which is less, not greater than 0, so it just finishes. But we could type pieces of code in here and get a feel for what they do. So for example, if I wanted to look at a for loop, I could just type the for loop in here. Okay. And then, after I've typed my for loop, I could, for example, let's put something in here. If I can type correctly. So I type my code, I say I want to use it, and then I have here a picture of what this code looks like as it's running, along with the memory that's associated with it. So you see the first thing it does is it does the initialization, then it does the comparison, then it does the print, then it gets rid of the leftover variable, increments, and keeps going. Okay? And so you can see the order in which each piece of the code is used. Now I'll highlight closing curly braces because those are used to throw away variables and things. You're welcome to play with it. If you're a little confused about some piece of loop, I would encourage you to try it out in here and see what it looks like. It would be useful to be able to sort of predict this. Right? If you understand a loop, you could draw this yourself. And so that might be a good way of sort of testing how much loops have sunk into your head as to what they're actually doing in Java. Questions? Okay, last Friday we were going to show a few more examples of that, but I want to get some new material. So there it is, linked from lecture notes 15. You're welcome to go look at it, try it out. It pretty much only does numbers, println, and loops, but you're welcome to play with it. There's also a couple more pieces of loops we need to talk about. So section 4.8 of the textbook is a very short section, which says there's something called break and there's something called continue and don't use them. And that's unfortunate because you use them. Everybody uses them. They're great. So we're going to talk a little bit about how break and continue work. You saw a little bit about break in a different context when we were talking about case statements 2 weeks ago, I guess now. But they mean something different in a loop. So in a loop, if I see continue, it means skip the rest of this pass through the loop and go back up to the next pass. Okay? So continue means skip whatever's left in this loop, but keep going around the loop. Break, on the other hand, means I am done with this loop. Go after the loop and do whatever is next. I don't want to run any more iterations of this loop. So they're both ways of sort of short-circuiting or ending early our operation. So let's look at a piece of code here, a nasty little piece of code that plays around with continue and break. So I've got this absolutely gigantic and ugly piece of code. Let's actually start with something a little easier. We'll get back to that, and that's the one that's available on the lecture notes. But let's talk about something really simple first. Let's just start with a very simple method here. Let's have system.out.println(i). Okay, I'm just going to print out various values of i, four of them in particular. And I run this, and I see it print 0, 1, 2, and 3. Hopefully not a surprise. You're welcome to try this out loop visualization tool and see what's happening, but this is what's happening. break and continue our ways of changing how much of this happens. Okay? So, I am going to put here, if I equals 2, continue. Let's put it in here prettily. Okay? If I is 2, then I should continue. Continue means skip the rest of this pass through the loop and go to the next pass through the loop. So I run this, I see that 2 doesn't get printed. 2 doesn't get printed because the first thing I do is I see, is it 2? And if it is, I go to the next pass. So I never get to the print for case 2. If I put something in front of it, that would happen. So I could, for example, say I equals here, except it didn't like that for some reason. So I could print out I equals up there. I must have cap locks on. There we are. And now when I run it, I see that for case 2, it still does I equals, but instead of getting around to printing the 2, it then comes back up and prints I equals again for the next pass. This is the idea of continue. Skip the rest of this pass through the loop. Questions? Okay, let's talk about break. I'll just change this word to break. If I break, I am done with the loop. Okay, I'm not done with the whole program, I'm just done with the loop. So if I had some println after the loop, loop over, I would get there. Okay? But break means stop the rest of this pass through the loop and stop all future passes through the loop. I'm just done. Which can be very useful if you have some case in the middle where you want to say, for example, if I write a blank line, I'm done with the loop. You'd be familiar if you've looked at homework 3, okay? There's various cases where I want to stop my loop early. And that's what break does, as opposed to continue, which just skips part of one pass. So those are the two basic pieces we have for making loops stop a little early. So let's talk now about how it works in nested ugly loops. Okay? So what does this nasty ugly loop do? I have a loop inside a loop inside a loop. Remember we talked earlier when we first introduced loops and ifs about the idea that you can put one statement inside another, including ifs inside loops and loops inside ifs as much as you want. So I see I have 4, 4, 4 if and another if outside of one of the fours. Perfectly fine. And it does exactly what you might otherwise expect. Let's momentarily remove the continues of breaks and let's try running this. Okay? And we will see that for I of 0, for j of 0, or for k of 0, it prints it out. Then it k moves up through the innermost loop first. Right? We run the inner loop first. Then we run a step of the outer loop. We run the inner loop all again. And we keep doing. So we get sort of every combination of I, j, and k between 0 and 3. Before I add back in the continues and breaks, any questions about that? About how the nested loops work? We did see them before, but didn't spend much time on them. Nested loops make sense to me. Nope, I'm totally lost. I'm somewhere between making sense and totally lost. Okay. Let's try them in our loop visualization tool then. Okay, let's come over to our loop visualization tool. Let's try a very simple loop. 4 and I equals 0. I is less than 10. I just make it smaller. Plus plus I. Okay? So I'm going to make a very basic for loop, and I'm just going to put another for loop inside of it. And actually, for the visualization tool, I'm not even going to bother putting anything to happen in the middle. Okay? Just got this very simple piece of code. So what happens when I run this code? I just start in the beginning, so I initialize I. Is I less than 4? It turns out that yes, I is less than 4. So I come down to this line, initialize j. Is j less than 4? Yes, it is. So I don't do anything. I increment j, which we can see here. It incremented. Okay, so it was 0. It goes up to 1. We check if it's less than 4, it is, so we don't do anything. We increment it, check if it's less than 4, it is, we don't do anything. And we keep going along here, looping in that loop, until we get to the point where j is not less than 4. Okay, when j is not less than 4, then we're done with the outer for loops. We come back up and initialize I again. So we increment I, and then we make j all over again and start around the loop one more time. And we go through that loop one more time. And when that's over, we come back and initialize I again. So over and over again, we're doing everything the inner loop says, once for every time the outer loop runs. So each loop acts exactly like a loop always acts. It just happens to be the action inside the loop is another loop. I don't know if that helped or not. Let's find out. I feel comfortable with nested loops. Nope, still totally lost. Somewhere in between. All right, we've moved most of you into the somewhere in between category. Hurrah! Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about that then. All right, so let me come back to my code here. Okay. Actually, I guess I should ask an earlier question. I am totally comfortable with a single loop without another loop inside. Nope, even one loop gets me lost. Somewhere in between. Okay, so most of us get a single loop, right? So a single loop acts just like any other statement. Okay, it acts just like a system.out.println or a variable equals or anything we happen to want to do. It's just something that happens. This whole piece of code here is just something that happens. Okay? It happens to happen by repeating something. But once you've written the whole thing, it's just one step. It's sort of like we've said, we've carefully described how you walk by putting your right foot in front of your left and your left foot in front of your right and your right foot in front of your left and your left foot in front of your right and your right foot in front of your left and so on. And now what we've written it, we can now just say walk somewhere. That whole piece of code just means do the entire action. Okay? So if that just means do the entire action, then I can, for example, put it inside an if statement. Okay? The only time I want you to do all of those actions is if 3 is less than 4. If 3 isn't less than 4, don't do all of that stuff. Right? Because the 4 is just another kind of statement. I should make it like this. Let's say x is equal to 0, and let's say if x is less than 4, do this. Okay? Again, it's just the for loop is just one thing to do. It happens to be internally doing a lot of things, but it's just one statement. It's one action. And so if I can do it only sometimes, and I can only do it if it's if something is true, I can also do it, for example, while something is true. Keep doing this as long as something is true. Right? So if I run this piece of code, since x is always that, it just keeps running around. Okay? What's it do? It prints 0 through 3. Then what's it do? It prints 0 through 3. Then what's it do? It prints 0 through 3. Over and over and over again. Okay? And if I wanted to, I could also say things, for example, like x is increases by 1. And now it will do the print 0 through 3 things once for each value of x. Okay? Because this entire for loop is just an action. And we've put it inside a loop that will repeat 4 times. So that single action will happen 4 times. So there's no real magic here. It's just sort of the meaning of doing something over and over again. I'm still a bit lost about nested loops. Nope, I pretty much got it now. Okay, together that was a third of the class. Let's try this again. I get loops. Nested loops make sense. Nested loops are a little confusing, but not horrible. I don't get it at all. Okay, turn to your neighbors. Try to come up with a question. Okay? Even if you get it, try to come up with a question you used to have and now understand the answer of. I will ask people to give me questions about nested loops. So turn to your neighbors, come up with a question. You've got about 30 seconds to come up with one. Thank you. questions. Give me some questions. Yes. No, that's a stretch. Anyone? Yes.
Does break break the inner or outer loop? Okay, we'll talk about that in just a moment.
Other questions? Yes. How do you what?
So how do...
Oh, I see. How do you make has next return false? Is that what we're asking? Is that what... I may have got your question wrong. If that's not what you're asking, then ask it again. That is what you're asking. Okay. Yes.
How do you break out of several loops?
Okay. Yes.
What's the difference between plus plus and plus?
Plus plus versus, I'm actually going to put another plus plus there because even though you didn't ask about it, but plus plus versus plus equals, we'll talk about that. Other questions? Yes.
I just don't understand the difference between the while and without the while.
You don't understand the difference between the while and the for, or what the while does?
When you run it, why is that different?
So why does the while change the behavior of the for inside it?
Okay. What is the while doing up there?
Yes. Yes, that's why I have the two plus pluses. Yeah, we'll talk about, let's do this. Let's say let's see this and this and this. All right. Other questions? Okay, then let's start answering some of these questions. Let's start with this one because the plus plus is because it's easiest to answer. Simple part, they all do the same thing. Almost. For all practical purposes that we care about, plus plus I plus plus, and I plus equals 1 all mean exactly the same thing. And as a matter of fact, they all mean the same thing as I equals I plus 1. I'll get rid of the spaces there so it looks like an entity. Okay? There are some small differences. Small differences meaning we almost never care. It turns out that you can use any one of these things, the entire piece of it, as if it was a number. And if you do that, they mean different things. We are never going to do that. Okay? So we don't care. It is also randomly true that three of these run in the same speed, but this one right here is slower. Okay? There's no obvious reason why that would make sense. You'll get to learn about it when you talk about software architecture a little bit, if you happen to go that far in our curriculum. It's a tiny bit slower, like nanoseconds slower, to do I plus plus versus any of the other three. So I will almost always write plus plus I or I plus equals 1, and I sort of pick between them almost at random. You can use any of them you want. They all mean increase I by 1. The first three are in some sense shorthand for the last one. Amy, let me say more about those. Okay. Let's talk about has next next, even though it's not really about loops. It's worth talking about. How do you know if there's another thing? Well, we should also talk about has next slide as well. It's very similar. Okay. If I want to know if there's more text, how do I know if there's more text? And the answer is the scanner looks for the end of file. We'll talk about files in the second half of today. Just briefly, we'll probably push some of that over onto Wednesday. But it's going to look for that end of the file. Okay? How do you know if there's more stuff to read in a newspaper? You reach the end of the newspaper. How do you know if there's more stuff to read in a book? Have you reached the end of the book? How does a scanner know if there's more stuff to read from your keyboard? Well, there's no end of a keyboard, okay? So there is actually a special key code you can type, which pretends to be the end of the keyboard. Most platforms, it's Control D. Some older versions of Windows, it is Control Z instead. But whatever it is, you type it in there and it tells your computer, and there ain't nothing more coming. It's as if we had reached the end of the book. So there is this idea of what's called the end of file, or it used to be called end of line, although that's not used very often anymore. Okay? But usually it's called end of file or just EOF, which is actually something that can be read. Okay? There are a few other sort of sentinel values that are sometimes used. But for the most part, there's this special key code, which is either Control D, most likely, or Control Z when you're typing in the console in Eclipse. Questions about that? Yes.
Wait, what's the significance of that?
Like, why is that significant? I am going to try to make it so you don't need to know that for any of your homeworks. But it is interesting to know if you're typing something. If you have a loop that says while scanner.hasNext, it will just seem to go forever until you finally give it a Control D or a Control Z, depending on your platform, until you give it an end of file so that it knows it's done with that loop. Okay? So it's mostly useful internally. It's not something I'm going to test you on. It's just something that might be useful to you as you're writing code. I don't feel like I answered your question.
So, like, if you write while in a conditional statement has the next line, if somebody presses enter for, like, the next input stream,
then it just keeps going. So if I just type enter, the next line is blank. But it is a line. There's a blank line next, and then there's a blank line after that, and a blank line after that, and then you type something, and there's a non-blank line. And to say there are no more lines, you have to give it an end of file token, which is different from a blank line. Does that make sense? Yes?
So then how do you write that into your program if your user doesn't know that they need to press Control Z?
You don't. Okay, so the question is, how do I tell the user they need to do this? I could put it in the prompt. I could put in parentheses Control D or Control Z to end. Okay? But usually when you're writing code that people are interacting with a console, you either expect A, that you've designed the program so there's a simpler way to exit, like a blank line, or a special quit token or something, or you assume they know how consoles work and they know how to tell you the end of the input. So there are various consoles out there in the real world. I regularly use three of them for my own purposes, and they each have their own way of telling you what the end of the file is, and I just happen to know them. And that's typical, right? You expect that people know how to click on things and so on as well. So you're not used to consoles, so I'm having to teach you about consoles. But if you're writing a console program, you assume people know consoles. Other questions about this idea of end of something? Okay. Let's talk about what is the while doing up there. So if I look at this little piece of code, let's talk about what's inside the while first. Okay? In fact, let's talk about what's inside the while by getting rid of the while. Okay, so I'm just going to put a comment around the while itself. I'm going to leave the curly braces and everything so the indentation stays the same. This code says, set x to 0, set I to 0, as long as I is less than 4, print out I and increment I by 1. So it's going to do I of 0, I of 1, I of 2, I of 3, I will become 4, but that's not less than 4, so it's not going to print it out. And then it's going to increase x by 1, so x will go up to 1. Okay? So x starts at 0, I goes from 1 through 4, but only prints out the first 3 of from 0 through 3, but it only prints out the first four of those, and then x increases by 1. Questions about what that does? Because I can go into more detail if we want. No. Okay. So that's what this piece of code does. Now let's look at what would happen if I didn't have any. If I didn't have this in here, all right? I just have I equals 0, while x is less than 0, do nothing.
This piece of code will set up a box that holds a zero in it, and it'll say, is zero less than four? Yes, it is. 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 Forever. Okay? Questions about that? All right, let's put in one more line. Let's put in the x plus equals 1. Now this loop will stop nicely. This acts pretty much like the for loop before, right? X starts off at 0. As long as x is less than 4, I'm going to increase by x by 1. So is 0 less than 4? Yes, it is. Change it to 1. Is 1 less than 4? Yes, it is. Change it to 2. Is 2 less than 4? Yes, it is. Change it to 3. Is 3 less than 4? Yes, it is. Change it to 4. Is 4 less than 4? No, I'm done. Questions about that? Okay, so what magic happens when I have the for loop and the while loop? The for loop, if I look at it, I notice no part of it depends on x. It does the same thing no matter what x is. And what does it do? It prints 0 through 3. So it'll print 0 through 3 every time I run it. And the while loop doesn't depend on the for loop in any way except it contains it inside. So the while loop still does what the while loop used to do. So the while loop is still going to increase x from 0 to 4. The for loop is still going to print out the numbers 0 through 3. But the for loop is going to be asked to do that once for each value of x. So it's going to print out 0 through 3 when x is 0. It's going to do it again when x is 1, again when x is 2, again when x is 3. Not when x is 4, because when x is 4, we're done with the loop. Yes?
Why is while different?
While and for. Okay, so these are, remember we said when we introduced the for loop, the for loop is shorthand for a particular type of while loop. And this is that type of while loop. Okay, so this is the same as having two for loops inside each other. I just happen to make one of them a while and one of them a for. Other questions about this piece of code? All right. We explained it. So, break and enter loops, and how do you break out of several loops? So for this, let's look at a more complicated code. Okay? Let's jump ourselves up to three loops with an if. Now again, okay, as we're looking at these lots of loops, it's so ugly. All we have to do is think about each loop sort of by itself. Okay? So let's start with the innermost loop. What does the innermost loop do, the K loop? It's going to repeat four times from 0 through 3. It's going to skip one of them, because if k is the same as I, I'm going to skip it. So it's actually going to do it three times, and three times it's going to print out values of I, j, and k. Okay? Continue and break both only tie to the most recent loop that they're inside of. So this continue is inside of this for loop most innerly, so that's the loop it's going to go to the next step of. There are other loops outside, but it only talks about the innermost one. Okay? If I look one step so this is going to print out three numbers, or three rows of numbers. If I look at the next loop out, it's also going to repeat four times. It's always going to do whatever my printout three rows of numbers is. And then it actually has this piece of code here, which says, if j is the same as I, I'm done the entire loop. Okay? So it's going to stop early. It's going to stop the loop before it's done. And in the outermost loop, it doesn't have a break or a continue. So if I run this, it's going to look kind of weird. Okay. So the first time through the loop, I is 0, j is 0. Okay. It's going to print out k of 1. And the reason it prints out a k of 1, not a k of 0, is because when k is the same thing as I won't print it out. So I'll never have the I and k both being 0, right? Because if that was the case, I wouldn't get to the print statement. I would go to the next step. But it prints out the 1, 2, and 3. And then it increases j. But it would increase j, except that I've got this break statement, okay? So before I can get there, since j and I are both 0, I'm done with the j loop. I don't go to the next step of j because I and j were both 0. So I break out of the j loop. So I come back out to the I loop, change I to 1, j of 0, k of 0. Since k is not I, I get to print that one out. But I skip k of 1. I print out k of 2 and 3. Then I increment j because j was not the same as I, and I print out those, and so on. This is a strange and not particularly interesting loop. Why do we have it? Because it's an interesting thing to try to walk through on paper. Okay? I would encourage you, if this is at all confusing to you, to pull out a sheet of paper sometime and try to walk through what's happening, or put this into the loop tracking tool and see what happens at every step along the way and why it behaves the way it does. So, as far as answering the questions go, let's go ahead and answer them. The inner loop. And then the question was, how do you break out of the out of several loops? You set some variable. So this is a kind of an awkward thing to do. If I wanted to break out of all of the loops instead of just one, how would I do it? I'd have to have some variable that says, am I done all the loops? And I'd have to check it, and it's annoying. So I'm not really going to show you that code, okay? There are ways of getting around it, but it's not easy like just writing a break inside the innermost loop is. Questions? Yes?
So we probably won't
use it. Breaking out of multiple loops at the same time, you probably won't need to use it. At least not for a while. It's possible during the end of the semester that will become useful. And if that's true, we'll come back and talk about various ways to make it happen. Other questions? Okay. All right, well, I think that was helpful. I hope that was helpful. Let's talk briefly about files, okay? So I have more in lecture notes about files that I'm going to talk about today. We'll move some of it to Wednesday and move some of Wednesday's topic to later on, probably after the test, okay? So let's talk actually just here. Yeah, I've got a lot here about files. So let's just talk about the idea of a file first off, and then I'll talk about this code. We'll actually get to play with it some on Wednesday. So a file is a way of storing information. Hopefully you're familiar with the idea of files on your computer, right? They store stuff. And one of the things they can store is just plain text, just like you type with your keyboard. Those are called plain text files, .txt. Java files also store plain text. Okay, we're just typing directly into it. There's no special formatting or anything except what Eclipse decides to add after the fact. And just like I can print to the console and read from the console, I can print to a file and read from a file. Okay? There's no intrinsic difference from Java's perspective between files and the console, except for how they're defined. So the idea here is, if I want to make a scanner, I could have put system.in right here. But if I want to, instead I can put a file object, which I make with new file, just like I make a scanner with new scanner, and so on. Okay? I can put a file object in there, and that file object represents some file. And then once I have the scanner, I use the scanner like I'd use any other scanner. It's got all the hasnexts and all the nexts. Okay? So I grab whatever I want to grab. So this piece of code is just reading one line and printing it out. I can also have a separate scanner for the keyboard if I want. Okay? And we talked earlier, you should only have one scanner. You should only have one scanner per input source, because we don't want them competing. But a scanner that's reading from a file is not competing with a scanner that's reading from the keyboard. Okay? So because I'm reading from a file and a keyboard, I'm going to have a scanner for the file, and I'm going to have a scanner for the keyboard. And they behave just like scanners always behave. They know what to read because of how I design them, by how I construct them. And I can also write to a file. So the thing that writes to a file, strangely enough, is not called file. It's called a print writer. Why is it called a print writer? Because the people who designed Java, that's what they called it. Okay? But once I make a print writer, I can treat it just the way I would treat system.out. Okay? So I can use println and print, and actually all the other stuff that we've never talked about how you can do, like flush and printf and so on. But I can use those printing methods on the file just like it could on the console. It won't go to the console. I won't get to see the output. It will just put it into the file. Now, a warning. If you start writing files, whatever was there before goes away. Okay?
So if you start writing files, be careful that you don't ever try to open a file you don't want to be destroyed. Because Java won't even warn you. It will just overwrite whatever's in the file. It'll be gone. You'll have new material there instead. Okay? But with that caveat, you can write and read from files. Programs that read from files are quite a bit more common than programs that write from files. So although we'll show you how to write from files, mostly we'll have you experiment with reading from them instead. But we have these various pieces here. So let's just see what happens when I run this program. Oh, I should mention one more piece here. Right after I make my file, because it's an object, it has methods. And one of the methods it has is, does this file exist? So I can say, if the file exists, make a scan and read. Okay? Don't bother if it doesn't. So in this particular case, when I run it, initially the file does not exist. So it skips over this first step. The scanner from the keyboard asked me something worth remembering. I am amazing. Okay? Great. You notice I have here a println that should have printed out that line, but it didn't print it to the screen. System.out is the screen. That's not what I printed to. I printed out to this out file. So if I were to go back into Eclipse, and if I were to refresh my project, wherever refresh is, I would see there's a file here where the output has been put. Okay? So the file is generated. It's generated in your project folder. It doesn't initially show up until you refresh the folder because it doesn't automatically look for new files. But you can refresh it. You can open it. I could even edit it and save it. Okay? And then when I come back over here and run this, the first thing it does is say, does the file exist? This time it does. So it makes a scanner, reads a line, and prints out what I asked it to print out. Okay? So this is the basic idea of how you have your program remember stuff. You save it in a file, and when you rerun the program, you read it back in. So you can do preferences this way, you can remember where window positions are, you can do all kinds of stuff with this basic idea of writing files. It gets a lot more complicated than that. There's these special files with fancy format called databases and all kinds of interesting things you can do with them. But the basic idea is really this simple. Instead of writing to the screen, you write it to a file, and then you read it back yourself later. Questions about the concept? Okay. Files are much more commonplace to see has next line and has next. We talked earlier about how you have to put the end of the file if you want that to stop on the console. But if I'm writing my own code for that, I can do it sort of automatically, right? The file actually does end. There are only so many lines of text in the file. And so I can automatically troll through the file, get all of the lines, and parse them out. Usually when we're doing this with files, we put the file in a format that's easy for the computer to read. Not necessarily easy for a human to read, easy for the computer to read. So that's part of the reason why there's so many file extensions, so many types of files. Each one is designed to be read by a different program, right? So a doc file, for example, generated by Word and lots of other word processors these days, is a format that somebody designed to be easy for word processors to read. Not for humans to read, just for the word processors. Okay? And there's lots of these file formats out there. Even JPEG files and image files like that are really ways of describing to the computer what color every pixel should be on the screen. Ways of describing the image so that the computer can easily read it. And so there's lots of different file formats that are all designed to be read by computers. When we come back on Wednesday, we'll get to look a little bit at how we'd read one particular one of those, called the comma-separated value, or CSV files. But let me just sort of briefly at this moment say, as we're moving forward, okay, we'll talk a lot about reading from files. We'll also talk about reading from web pages, which is very much the same thing.
And reading from them will be intrinsic. We'll actually ask you questions about reading files on the exam that's coming up next week. Writing files is something to know how to do, not really a learning objective of this course. So if the writing part of this code doesn't really catch you, you don't need to worry about it, okay? It's not something we're going to test you on. The reading is. Questions? All right, the next piece I have to talk about takes a little bit more than 5 minutes to go through, and I don't want to stop in the middle. So, I will see you all on Wednesday.